This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Broadway is celebrating its 100th birthday this year. On today's Fresh Air, we'll hear from a few of the people who've created some of Broadway's greatest musicals. It's part of our weekly program of interviews from our archives. We start with one of Broadway's greatest lyricists and composers, Stephen Sondheim. His mentor was lyricist Oscar Hammerstein. Sondheim is the composer and lyricist who's done the most to update the Rodgers and Hammerstein tradition. His musicals include Anyone Can Whistle, Company, Follies, A Little Night Music, Sweeney Todd, and Into the Woods. He broke into Broadway writing lyrics for two now classic musicals, West Side Story and Gypsy. Here's the Jet Song from the original cast recording of West Side Story, music by Leonard Bernstein.
When you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet, if the spit hits the fan, you got brothers around, you're a family man. You're never alone, you're never disconnected. You're home with your own, when company's expected, you're well protected. Then you are set with a capital J, which you'll never forget till they cart you away. When you're a jet, you... Now I know Tony like I know me, and I guarantee you can count him in.
In, out. Let's get cracking.
Where are you gonna find Bernardo?
At the dance tonight at the gym.
But the gym's neutral territory.
Ooh, I'm gonna make nice with him. I'm only gonna challenge him.
Great, Daddy-O.
So everybody dress up sweet and sharp. Meet Tony and me at 10. And walk tall.
We always walk tall.
We're jets!
The greatest!
When you're a jet, you're the top cat in town. You're the gold medal kid with the heavyweight crown. When you're a jet, you're the swingin'est thing. Little boy, you're a man. Little man, you're a king. The jets are in gear. Our cylinders are clicking. The sharks will steer clear. Cause every Puerto Rican's a lousy chicken. Here come the jets like a bat out of hell. Someone gets in our way. Someone don't feel so well. Here come the jets, little world, step aside. Better go underground, better run, better hide. We're drawing the line, so keep your noses hidden. We're hanging a sign, says visitors forbidden. And we ain't kidding. Here come the jets, yeah, and we're gonna be every last bargain gang on the whole bargain street, on the whole.
I spoke to Stephen Sondheim in 1988, and he told me he was still embarrassed by some of his lyrics for West Side Story.
I didn't like them then, and I don't like them now, and there are two lyrics I like. The rest of them sound very written to me.
Which ones are the ones that you like?
Something's Coming and the Jet Song. The others are, you know, they're very self-conscious, but that was partly Lenny's influence, because he very much wanted the show to be important, and that, to him, important meant that the lyrics should be, quote, poetic, and his idea of poetic and mine are different. And I think what he really wanted was purple prose, and I wanted simplicity, which is what I'd gotten from Oscar. So I think the lyrics are very self-conscious. I was bending over to please everybody, of course, because I was so young. And so I find, you know, except for the occasional line, I think they're pretty embarrassing.
You worked with Julie Stein on Gypsy. You wrote the lyrics for
that. That was the next show, yes.
Now, in his autobiography, he said one of the things he liked about working with you is that you never asked for extra notes. does that mean, like, if you find a three-syllable word that you think is just perfect, that you beg the composer for two extra notes?
No, well, no, this, no, actually, no. I think... first of all, most of the lyrics in Gypsy, the music sort of... followed the lyrics. That say, I would write sample quatrains or couplets and give them rhythms to work from. But in fact, I'd never do that anyway. When I work with a composer, I've only worked with three. But once in West Side Story, I asked for extra syllables. I mean, a number of the tunes in West Side Story were taken out of Candide that were not used in Candide. One of them was a song called One, which was composed of dotted half notes, and it went one hand, one heart. But I said, when we got to Washington, I said, it's just too few notes there, and the words just too heavy and too pretentious, and at least, you know, if you give me three-quarter notes instead of one dotted half, I would appreciate it. Well, the lyric's still pretty pretentious, but it's not as pretentious as it was. Maybe Julie had that from other people. I don't believe in, though, like everybody else, I often tend to be verbose. When I write lyrics, I try to fight against it. And I remember Oscar used to set me exercises in theory and say, you know, write a whole note melody and a whole note lyric. A whole note meaning, you know, where you have to sustain a note. Like he wrote a song called Who with Jerome Kern. When you, Who stole my heart away. Well, if you hear that tune, it's hard to set that lyric because you've got to find a word where you can, the singer can sustain the vowel sound and where it's natural punctuation. And it's hard to do. And I think most lyric writers tend to be verbose, and I think that's what Julie was probably referring to, was that, you know, I'd been trained quite the reverse way. Not that there aren't wordy lyrics in Gypsy, but there aren't very many of them.
Have you ever taken a lyric of yours and changed it because you thought it was too clever?
No, I've taken it, when I think that the audience isn't getting it, or when I think it's out of character. I did it in Into the Woods. There was a nice couplet in a song called No More, and it was very graceful, and it was too graceful for the character. Yes, I will take it out sometimes, not often, because I usually do that in my study while I'm writing it, when I think that it's either out of character or when I think that it may be something difficult for the audience to assimilate quickly, because the whole point of a song is, as opposed to a poem, which you can read at your own speed, the lyric goes by at its speed, and you have to catch up with it. So it's up to the lyric writer and the composer to make it clear to the audience, at the same time not lag behind them nor be so far ahead of them that they get baffled. So sometimes you have to underwrite lyrics for just that purpose. You have to give them air, and you have to make the lyrics simpler than you would if it was on paper.
I know that you collect puzzles and you're interested in puzzles. Is lyric writing similar to a puzzle?
Oh, sure.
And the problems you have to solve?
All art is. All you have to solve it. Same thing as with a painting or with a novel. I mean, you're always solving problems of structure, architecture, and things like that. In lyrics, I think it's more critical because there are so many fewer words. I just violated some basic speech. So many fewer words. But at any rate, there are fewer words. And therefore, each one becomes important. Also, since I believe in writing lyrics that reflect the inflection of regular speech, the rise and fall of the language, and how long you sustain a word in a given line becomes, to my ear anyway, critical if you're trying to give the impression of naturalistic speech. One of the problems with Sweeney Todd was I didn't want the audience to laugh at this melodrama. I mean, we do live in the 20th century, and people don't go for this kind of blood and thunder stuff anymore, and it's much more horrible out on the street than it is on the stage. But I also didn't want them to think that they were, quote, at an opera. So one of the triumphs for me of Sweeney Todd is I look around the second act at the audience's face. They don't know that people are singing. They really think they're talking because they're so involved with the story and what's going to happen next and who's going to get killed next. They don't realize they're being sung at. And that's a result of lyric writing being so seeming like dialogue, and that kind of stuff comes through a lot of sweat, and that's what working out a puzzle is.
Stephen Sondheim recorded in 1988. Coming up from our archives, an interview with Arthur Lawrence, who wrote the books for Sondheim's first two musicals, West Side Story and Gypsy. Here's Ethel Merman from the original cast recording of Gypsy, singing one of Sondheim's great lyrics, music by Julie Stein.
Some people can get knitting sweaters and sitting still. That's okay for some people who don't know they're alive. Some people can thrive and bloom, living life in a living room. That's perfect for some people of 105. But that I gotta see yet, all the places I gotta play, all the things that I gotta be yet. Come on, Papa, what do you say? Some people can be content playing bingo and paying rent. That's peachy for some people, for some humdrum people to be. But some people ain't.
Arthur Lawrence not only wrote the book for Gypsy, he directed the recent Broadway revival, which starred Tyne Daly. He also directed La Cage aux Folles, I Can Get It For You Wholesale, and Sondheim's Anyone Can Whistle. Gypsy was based on the memoirs of stripper Gypsy Rose Lee. I spoke to Arthur Lawrence in January of 1990, early into the run of his revival of Gypsy, and he told me why he wanted to revive it.
Because I was asked to, and I loved the show, and I felt that enough time had passed that the show could finally be done the way I thought it should be done. When it originally played in New York, it was considered a very tough, unpleasant show, and the production was really rather sweet. It laid off a lot of things that, it being 1989, I was able to do. It's very different from the other productions. It goes much more deeply into the relationships, into what I would call the dark side of it.
What's an example of something that was too unpleasant for the original production that you could go into now?
Well, it still is. I mean, Mother is still sacrosanct in America. And they don't like, a lot of people don't like seeing this woman who is not the most pleasant mother in the world. But also there was the relationship between Rose and Herbie the agent is extremely sexual now. It has elements of romance, but it's a distinctly a man-woman relationship. That was never played before.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the original production, Ethel Merman starred as Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from what I've read about the original production, you weren't really satisfied with her performance.
You didn't read that anyplace.
Well, what I read was that you referred to her as an opening night performer, someone who gave her all on opening night.
Yes, she gave her all, but...
After that, it kind of diminished a little bit.
That's true. I'm very grateful to Merman because I don't think they would have done the show without her,
mm-hmm.
even though she was on the skids, as it were, at that time. She had had a flop or two, and as a matter of fact, the show opened with almost no advance. And if we hadn't gotten good reviews, David Merrick, the producer, told me we'd play 6 weeks and that was it. She did us a great service, and for that time, she was terrific. But it was never what I felt the performance should be.
Well, I read that one night you had a talk with her in front of the whole cast about her performance, about her not giving her all. What did you say to her?
I don't know where you read that.
I think it was in Sondheim and Company.
Well, it's only semi-true.
Mm-hmm.
What it was, I don't think she wasn't really an actress. She didn't know she had taken to walking through the show. But what I called her on was that she and Jack Klugman, who was played opposite her, the show had been running 6 months, and they were breaking up on stage, telling each other jokes, which I think is insulting to an audience. The audience comes, make them laugh, not each other. And I called her on that.
What was her reaction?
Oh, it was as though she were a naughty little child who'd been spanked. She took it.
Mm-hmm.
And went right on doing it again.
When you're writing the book for a musical, do you have a sense in your mind of where the songs belong and what the transition into the song is going to be like?
Total. That's the way I write. I plan for that.
Mm-hmm.
I do as much as possible to write into the music. Let the music take over. Lift the characters to the point where they can't do anything else but sing.
Can you give us an example?
Yes. At the end of the first act of Gypsy, there's a song called Everything's Coming Up Roses, which if you haven't seen the show, you think is a kind of happy, jazzy Broadway tune. What happens with that song is one of the reasons why I don't want it, and we all don't want it, to be made into a movie again. What is done with that song you can only do on the stage. You can't do it in the movies because movies are too literal. What happens is a woman literally goes off her rocker and bursts into that song. This is a woman who suddenly has an enormous disappointment. She's furious, she's angry. She rages until she can't anymore, and it comes out musically. It's against the emotion. It's all this ridiculous, insane optimism that this woman has. and it's done in music.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we listen to Everything's Coming Up Roses? Angela Lansbury is singing. This is from the London production that you directed in 1973.
And just remember that listening to her are her daughter and her lover, and they are terrified and stunned by this woman's madness.
I had a dream about you, baby. It's gonna come true, baby. They think that we're through, but baby, you'll be swell, you'll be great. Gonna have the whole world on a plate. Starting here, starting now, honey, everything's coming up roses. Clear the decks, clear the tracks. You've got nothing to do but relax. Blow a kiss, take a bow, honey, everything's coming up roses. Now's your inning.
That's Angela Lansbury from the 1973 production of Gypsy, which was directed by my guest Arthur Lawrence. Arthur Lawrence also wrote the book for Gypsy, and he also wrote the book for West Side Story and the screenplays for The Way We Were, The Turning Point, and Rope. His directing credits include Le Cage aux Folles, I Can Get It for You Wholesale, and Anyone Can Whistle. We'll take a short break, then we'll be back. This is Fresh Air. Arthur Lawrence is my guest. Do you ever feel that the librettist gets the least credit in a musical? You know, in a musical, you always hear so much more sometimes about the songwriters.
Every librettist feels that, and it's accurate. No musical is ever referred to as the work of the librettist. It is only referred to in terms of the composer and, if the lyricist is as famous as Steve Sondheim, the lyricist. I think that goes back to opera, where you don't know who wrote the libretto for the operas. Mm-hmm. You only know the composer. And I think one of the reasons we don't have more and better playwrights writing musicals is that everybody has a need for recognition, which is, by the way, what Gypsy is really about. And it is so frustrating not to get any recognition for what one has done in creating a musical that a lot of playwrights simply won't try. And you get the people write letters to the Times and the critics say, oh, yes. And then for 2 minutes they recognize the librettist and then they don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply a given. The reason I do it is I just love musical theater. And I love writing them. I'm stuck.
Let me ask you about the book that you wrote for West Side Story. Now, I believe the idea for a musical based on Romeo and Juliet was the choreographer Jerome Robbins.
That's right.
Well, how did he originally pitch it to you? What was the initial idea he proposed?
The initial idea was quite different from what it was. It was about a Jewish girl and a Catholic boy in New York over Easter and Passover. And I thought that was A.B.'s Irish Rose, and I wanted no part of it. And then several years passed, and I happened to be in California, and Lenny Bernstein was in California. By that time, juvenile delinquent gangs had come into being. And on the coast, there was a great problem with Chicanos, which in New York was Puerto Ricans. That's where the idea came from, the front page. And that's what the... And then Lenny and I called Jerry and said, we're ready to go.
Did you have any reservations about singing and dancing gangs?
On the stage, no. In the movie, yes.
Mm-hmm.
On the stage, the stage is total illusion. You come into a box and you see this proscenium and then people hop on and hop off. There's an orchestra in the pit. But people have imagination and the theater makes you use it. And you will accept almost anything. But movies, to me, are either... The nature of the medium is such that movies are either realistic, by that I mean naturalistic, or surrealistic. To me, in the movie of West Side Story, I know it was a great hit, but when those boys came tourgeteing down the street, I didn't believe it for a minute. I still don't.
Now, you didn't write the screenplay for either Gypsy or West Side Story. Did you want to?
I wasn't asked to write the screenplay for West Side Story, and I wanted to. I was asked to write the screenplay for Gypsy, and I was going to till they told me they cast Rosalind Russell, and the director was Mervyn LeRoy, and I bowed out. We had wanted Judy Garland. They didn't because they said she had a weight problem. But of course, with the passage of time, Gypsy covers 15 years, even if she had a weight problem. If the white weight went up and down, it wouldn't have mattered.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think of the movie?
Of Gypsy?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's a candidate for one of the worst movies I ever saw.
So, you know,
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The only good thing in the movie was Natalie Wood.
Uh-huh.
R.I.P.
Well, just give me a sense of what you hate about the film.
Well, Rosalind Russell was very busy being Rosalind Russell. Again, she was wonderful in Wonderful Town. She's wonderful when she played this, what they used to call a dame, this hard-driving, executive, smart-cracking, certainly middle-class, if not upper-middle-class, woman. This is nothing from this blousy, vulgar, common, trashy Rose. I mean, she wore chic clothes. I remember her black and white high heels in the train station. It was just all off.
Now, you're the director. Do you go night after night to the theater?
I certainly do not. I'm working on a new show, happily, gladly.
When is it time for you to stop going?
Never. I go back every certain number of weeks to check up on them and, as in the immortal words of George Kaufman, remove the improvements.
Arthur Lawrence wrote the books for Gypsy and West Side Story and directed the recent revival of Gypsy. Our interview was recorded in 1990. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.